We started learning Parak Lamed Ches yesterday, the story of Yehuda and Tamar. We are left with. No, Beis, actually. Beis Iyar. Let the record show. So yesterday we started learning the story of Yehuda and Tamar. We went through the Chumash and the Rashi, and we were left with many questions. Like, for example, what in the world is why is Yehuda leaving? What is the story with Yehuda's? Did Yehuda ever have an intention of him marrying Shela? Right, he married Tamar is married to the two. Well, boy number one. Right, Er va'Onan. So Er died, she then marries Onan, assuming some type of Yibum to Onan, and then Onan dies, and then Yehuda tells her to get lost for a few years until she marries Shela. Was there ever an intention that she would actually marry Shela? That's a question. Yehuda then meets her, assumes that she is a Zona, that she is a prostitute, has via with her, she becomes pregnant, and it becomes revealed to Yehuda that his daughter-in-law is pregnant. Nobody knows, including Yehuda, that the impregnator was Yehuda himself. Yehuda says that she should be killed. She sends him a note saying, you know, by the way, you know, realize who you're dealing with here. Yehuda then backs away, and the two babies are born. That's pretty much the parak. So, in terms of issues, how did Yehuda end up here? Is Yehuda considered good in this parak? I mean, are the actions of Yehuda, are we coming from the perspective of Yehuda being a tzaddik, or are we coming from a more difficult perspective? What?
So, did he marry a Canaanite?
Did he marry a Canaanite? Right,
and that he did.
It sounds, the Chumash says that he married a Canaanite, right? And Rashi immediately shifts that around, and then those are the any other major issues here, right? Why did Yehuda say that she did you? If Yehuda didn't intend that Shela was going to marry her, why would he be so upset with her for her getting pregnant that she should be killed? Okay, so Rav Hirsch doesn't have in this section here. Again, Rav Hirsch is, if you want I don't want to say non-biased, because that's not really appropriate, but somebody who's not afraid to take a critical view of the Avos, so Rav Hirsch is the one to look at. He makes a point of that. Rav Hirsch and Ramban are probably most prominent for making things that Avos and members in Tanakh saying that, you know, they did things that are wrong, and perhaps this parak is not much of an exception. Rav Hirsch says it explicitly. Rav Hirsch doesn't give a running commentary like he does to the rest of the Chumash for some reason, but there's an introduction to this parak where he says, moreover, though, on the one hand, Judah's misbehavior with Tamar was one of those things which were kept for the moral influence of the future of the Torah of God to prevent. Nevertheless, we see him practicing monogamy. Meaning, Yehuda, yes, it's true he sinned with Tamar, granted that he sinned with Tamar, but recognize that he only, right, and only coming to this lapse after the death of his wife. He didn't do it while he was still married, he only did it after he was married, which I don't know if that makes us feel any more or less comfortable, but at least it gives a perspective that, on A, that what he did with Tamar just, you know, having bia with a prostitute that he meets at the corner, that's ostensibly what Yehuda thought he was doing. So Rav Hirsch is not going to try to cover that up. He says that that is what happened. But there is a positive to it, that he never did such a thing while he was still married. He only did it after his wife had passed away. Okay, but with that, let's go to the beginning of the parak. And the first that the parak opens up with is right after the sale of Yosef. And Yehuda goes down. Now, that idea of going down, we pointed out yesterday, is already questionable, because it seems like maybe he should be going up. But going down is understood as being going down. That either Rashi's interpretation is that he brings down is that the brothers sent Yehuda away, that they sort of impeached Yehuda from his leadership role, because that they said to him, you told us to sell him, right, as it sounds like as they're all racked with guilt, you told us to sell him, if you would have told us to bring him back to dead, we would have done that. So they kind of kick Yehuda out, and Yehuda goes on his own. The Sforno comments That at that time when he sold Yosef to Mitzrayim because of the advice of Yehuda, Shamar leMachrov lo Amar laHashivo v'Seichel el Aviv es Aviv, that they he thought he's the one who said to sell him and not to return him. Chal al Yehuda primei alav v'hul shnei bnei maves v'nishar shikol bneihem, that came from Yehuda the fruits of his actions, and that he had two sons that both died. So even though they are responsible for their own death, as the Chumash seems to imply, this is also an indication that this is part of the punishment of Yehuda. But one gets the feeling that Yehuda is kind of going off into a lackadaisical place here, that he's sort of leaving his tradition behind. The very next pasuk is where he goes ahead and marries a Kanani. So as he pointed out, Rashi is quick to point out that, no, it's not a Kanani, it's a Tigra, it's a merchant. And how could it be that he would marry a Kanani? That's the Masorah, that Avram didn't allow Yitzhak, and Yitzhak didn't allow Yaakov to marry Kanani. They sent him off, sent him off in order to find somebody from someplace else so that he wouldn't have to marry a Kanani. So that's the implication that Rashi gives. However, there is a Medrash which says, no, she was a Kanani. How is Yehuda allowed to marry a Kanani? That's the one thing that, that they're not allowed to do. The answer is no, that's when there's only one child, when there's only Yitzchak and there's only Yaakov, we can't risk Yitzchak or Yaakov by allowing them to marry a Kanani. But now it's a full-fledged clan. There's a bunch of children. So the prohibition of marrying Kanani fell away. Medrash seems to imply such a thing. So which means that Yehuda is actually married to a Kanani. Now whether that is a good thing or whether that is not such a great thing, unclear. It seems like it wasn't so. We don't hear about this woman again, other than the fact that she dies later on. And maybe her attitude might be reflective in the sons, and that the son, just conjecturing here, that you have two sons that both died for a sin that we would qualify as being on the sexual sin range. So that might be a reflection of their mother or Yehuda and Yehuda's choice in who he married. Okay, so. Great. So now let's move along a little bit. And one son dies, the second son dies, one son dies, and now it's time for the second one to marry them. So if we take a look at Pasuk Ches says, Vayomer Yehuda le'onan. Yehuda says to Onan, Bo el isha sachicha via bemosa. Go have relations with the wife of your brother, and you'll have yibum with her. Vakim zera la'achecha. And you will raise the zera of your brothers. Now, he didn't want to do that, right? Vayeda onan ki lo yehazara. That won't be his son. Vaya imbal eshes alchi v'shichi sartzil v'tin nasan zera l'achiv. So he wasted his seed onto the floor rather than give the zera to his brother. So Rashi says, what does it mean v'hakim zera? You will raise the seed. Rashi says, haben yikara al shem hamis. The child will be known by the name of the brother. Now that is a little odd, but that also seems to be the way the pasuk is described, where the actual mitzvah of yibum is talked about. In the Torah says, yakum al shem achiv, that they will be established on the name of the brother. So Ramban at least understands Rashi as saying, even though it's not so clear that is what Rashi is saying, but the Ramban understands Rashi as saying that he will have to name his son his brother. He will have to name his son heir. And that's what bothered him. He didn't want to have to do that. So it's not clear. The Sifrei Chacham doesn't interpret Rashi that way in defending him against the Ramban. But Ramban attacks Rashi saying, but that's not true. That's not the halacha. The halacha is not that you have to name the son the brothers after the brother. There's no such din. Some people do. I mean, people might want to. You might name after the brother who died. But there's no such halacha. So here the Ramban gives one of his, and we've had a few of these discussions from the Ramban about what the status of mitzvos were during the time of the Avos. So this is one of those places. So the Ramban says, "Aval inyan sod gadol misodos haTorah betoldas haAdam, v'niker hu le'enei royim asher nasan lehem Hashem inayim liros v'aznayim lishmoa." This is one of the sodos. This is one of the secrets. Actually, I meant to look in the art scroll to see if the art scroll translates this or not. But this is one of the secrets that is recognizable to those people that have eyes to see and ears to hear. Okay. That the wise people that came before the Torah, they knew that there was a toelis. They knew that there was a purpose in in the another brother marrying the wife of his brother, and he's the ideally the right person. If not him, the next closest in kin, meaning that brother's death, right? That woman who he is married to should then be married to one of his relatives. Doesn't necessarily, the brother is ideal, but if not the brother, it could be another relative. Because marrying any one of the relatives of that dead brother would be fitting, would have a purpose to it. Okay. And the minhag was to marry the wife of the dead brother or the father or someone else that's a close relative. That was the minhag. Not necessarily only to marry the brother, but to marry the relative. Now the Medrash says, seems to imply that Yehuda is the one who came up with this idea of Yibum. But not necessarily so. Not necessarily that he made it up. He received this tradition, and he was the one who did it. He was the one who carried it out for the first time. Now, however, the Torah comes along and prohibits many familial relationships, meaning a father is not allowed to marry his son's wife. Even after the son is dead. So the Torah prohibited a lot of these things, but the Torah left open one. What was the one that the Torah left open? The ability to marry the brother. Right. And that's the most obvious one, so we'll allow that one to happen, and for that one to... that idea to be carried on... But the other ones fell away. So,
if you, God forbid that your brother divorced a woman, you could not marry her.
No, that's the din of kalaso, daughter-in-law. Yeah,
yeah.
She's one of the. That's one of the relationships that are prohibited in the first mission, Yevamos.
When
the
list are right.
Yeah.
So this is an exception because of the death. So you're saying you're mentioning it would be.
So the Torah. So I think what this Ramban is saying, there's two aspects to this that are very relevant. One is the concept of Yibun exists as a mitzvah, as a mesorah, not necessarily as explicitly, as explicit in the Torah, because Yehuda knew the entire Torah, but Yehuda knew this tradition of doing Yibum. That made sense.
Right.
Not only that, Yibum was expanded, not just that brothers can marry their dead brothers' wives, but even any relative can marry their dead brothers' wives and should marry their dead brothers' wives. So that gives a new perspective on Yehuda marrying her, right? In theory, nowadays, if such a thing would happen, I believe that child would be a mamzer, right? If a father would then marry his son's his dead son's wife, right? I believe that would what?
His son's widow.
His son's widow.
Yeah, right.
His dead son's. Yeah. So a child that came from that unit would be a mamzer, but I don't believe that's not what we're pointing out here.
An uncle can marry.
An uncle is permitted to marry their niece, yes.
So they could, if the niece was a widow, the uncle could do Yibum.
Right, but that we okay. That's not our mitzvah though. We've defined the mitzvah of Yibum as a brother, yeah.
But there's two types of relationships. One is literally blood and one's by marriage. The person changes the status, he marries somebody else, right? It's not bloodily related, like it. A niece would be blood related.
Okay.
But the other, a daughter-in-law and things like that are connected through marriage.
Okay.
So it's just two ways you could start seeing two patterns. I don't. Yeah, whatever.
Okay,
it's
whatever.
True logic. I don't know.
Okay, all right. So, with that background, let's move on to the next pasuk. So now Yehuda says in pasuk Yud Aleph, Yehuda says to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, right, go back to your house until Shelah, my son, grows older. Ki amar penyamus gamhu kepekechav. He was nervous that lest he die like his brother. Atelach Tamar v'teisha beisaviyah. So Tamar goes back. So there is a question here. Did Yehuda actually intend that Shelah would ever marry Tamar? Right? Did Yehuda ever intend that? So you have a problem. If you assume that he did not intend that, so why is he so upset with Tamar later on when Tamar got pregnant?
Right.
Right? What, he's subjecting her to be an aguna. Like, well, what was the problem? If he did intend to marry her, to that Shayla should marry her, why didn't Shayla marry her already? Right? And if you say, well, Shayla needed to get older, so then what was the machluket? Then why did Tamar understand that? Right? Tamar should realize, okay, Shayla's getting older, I'm going to marry him, I'm not going to go ahead and try to recruit Yehuda, because I'm going to be able to marry Shayla.
Well, it says in the
Talmud
that she saw that Shayla had grown.
Right, in fact, that Shayla had grown. So what happens there? Right, so what happened there? So,
I mean, people do change their mind, right? I mean, you think it would be always an initial doubt. I mean, human beings are very fickle. You get people in one circumstance and believe one.
Okay,
thing.
Yeah.
Circumstances change, will change their mind.
Okay, all right, so people changing their mind, so that's unclear. So what's the Ramban's pshat? So the Ramban gives an understanding here. He says, I don't understand. Lo yadati lami yisbayish Yehuda ha-moshe b'doro mina isha azos v'lo yomar le'elich yishol mi beis. He says, I don't understand. Why didn't Yehuda just tell her to get lost? Why didn't Yehuda just tell her, go home and go marry somebody else? Why? You're saying, it ain't happening here. You're not going to marry my son. All right? If he didn't have in mind that Shayla, if he really didn't have in mind that Shayla was going to marry her, which seems to be the pshat of Rashi, Rashi says, Kolomer, he pushed her off. Shaloya b'day tu lasil. He didn't have in mind that Shayla would marry her. Hiyamer penyamus. Right? She's a black widow. That's the term that we gave yesterday. She's some, right? And Yehuda's not allowed to, not allowed to give his son to marry her because she's already had two husbands die. And she's not, right? And therefore it's not allowed. So the Ramban says, okay, if that's the case, so let her go free. So right. Tell her, okay, we're done. You know, go marry somebody else. Have a nice life. So, v'lama yito asked the Ramban, v'hi asur l'shela. She's asur to Shela. K'mosh amru ben esum betrei zimnei, havi chazaka. That's already a chazaka. V'od, ki biyoso makbid al zinunya, l'chayev osa srefa, nir shaya chafetz ba liyosa beveso. That if he's so careful about her znus, in order to say that she's chayev srefa, it seems that he did want her to be married into the family. Right, v'rachel kushelo shama Yehuda kibanu chatu v'yishalach b'yad pisham ve'in l'tamar behem chet. And it's hard, and it's rachel ku. It's not so believable that Yehuda didn't know that his sons had sinned. That's unclear. Why would Yehuda know that? Why would Yehuda know that his sons didn't sin? That his sons did sin. But that's the Ramban's assumption. Ramban is putting in this assumption that Yehuda knew that his son sinned, and therefore Tamar shouldn't be prohibited from marrying his third son. So it says the Ramban, so what's the Ramban's pshat? The Ramban's pshat is, v'nachum be'ina shahaya Shayla royally out. No, Shayla was going to do Yibim with her. Avalo ratza avim shiyavim lusav udenu nar penyachta bo kachiv asher meisu b'na'arayim. That Yehuda knew that the older brothers had sinned, but they sinned because they were young. They were young. They had certain desires and they were young. So Yehuda sees Shayla. He says, I know Shayla is supposed to marry Tamar, but I don't want Shayla to run into the same problems that his two older brothers did. So I'm going to hold off Shayla and not allow Shayla to marry Tamar until he's older, until he's old enough. Right, Kinarafa, yes. Right, they were young. Neither of them was 12 years old. I don't know how he knows that. The chasher yigdal v'yishma lemusar aviv az itnena lo liisha. When he gets older and he listens to the musar of his father, when his father can sit him down and tell him the way things should happen, right? So then he'll give Tamar to him as a wife. The chasher amtina yamim rabim v'rasa ki gadol shela beinah. So now they wait a while. And Shayla, and in her eyes, Tamar looks and says, no, Shayla's 12 years old already. He should be marrying me. She didn't know that Yehuda was going to hold him off. But his father still saw him as being very young. Because he was only 10 years old, and Yehuda thought he should wait longer. But Tamar was in a hurry. So Tamar had to figure out a way in order to get pregnated. So instead of going after Shayla, she goes after Yehuda. So that's the Ramban's pshat and what's going on here. Yehuda did have in mind that she would marry Shayla one day. That's why he gets so upset and says that that she got pregnated by somebody else and therefore he's going to have her burnt. Until he realizes that he's the one that actually impregnated her. But he was the one who actually did it. So therefore he... he says okay, so therefore she's off the hook, and then these children actually end up being for the better. Yes.
If he had intended for Shayla to marry her, then why did he send her away? Why wouldn't he keep her as part of the family? Just the mere fact that he sent her away to live with the guy.
Well. Okay, I think that there he wanted to just keep her separate from Shayla, give Shayla some space. That would be, I think, what the Ramban would, maybe what the Ramban would say. Right? It's interesting, this dispute that Yehuda thinks the boy is not old enough, and Shayla and Tamar thinks that the boy is old enough. Listening to a shiur recently, that Ari Leibowitz said from I don't remember Professor saying this, but when did he feel that it was that his girls were too old to kind of, when the girls were growing up, when they were 2-3 years old, so at what point did he start like instructing them, I don't remember what exactly, like in Sneas, or making sure they only stayed on the woman's side of the Mechitza, like at what point? So he said, I don't know, every year we'd have boys come over for like Purim and Hanukkah, we'd always go to his house and for it have a chagiga there. And you know, when the girls are really young, so the boys would, you know, pick him up and put him on their laps. And at some age, the boys wouldn't do that anymore. At some age, they realize that, you know, this is already a young girl. We're not going to like play around with her anymore. So it's interesting. So Mary Leibowitz pointed out that it could be that that's an interesting thing that Rosh Hashanah and Rite looked to see the way the boys treated them. Not the way I looked at her, because in the father's eyes, the girl's always going to remain daddy's little girl, right? It's the way I want to see how other people perceive her, and that's going to instruct me how I should instruct her. So that was a good... this Ramban has echoes of that, and that they have a distinct perspective on her.
Where do we pull out that she was the daughter of Avi Melech, and she was the daughter of a poet, and that's why...
So that was the next thing I was going to comment on. So one more point on this, just to kind of to round this out. So in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, so the time comes, and Yehuda is she starts showing by Hikim Shalosh Chadashim, by Yugad Li Yehuda Leimor Zansa Tamar Kalasecha, and it gets told to Yehuda that Tamar, your daughter-in-law, was Mizana. Right, that she had an illicit relationship, and not only that, she's pregnant. So Yehuda says that she should go ahead and be burned. So why is Yehuda being... What exactly is Yehuda's role here? Why is Yehuda being asked? So the Ramban says... the Rashi, and the Ramban quotes from Rashi, Amar Ephraim Mikasha. Who's Ephraim Mikasha? So in the Chevelle edition of the Ramban, he says there's two possible explanations of who this Mikasha is. Mikasha either means that he's a cucumber farmer, like Keshuin, our cucumbers. So he was Ephraim, the cucumber farmer, or that he was Kasha, he was a good debater. So one way or the other, we're not sure, but this is from a Medrash. Tamidil Shurabi Meir, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Tamar Bitil Shil Shem Haisa, Shehu Kohen, Lefichach, Danua Bisrefa, that she was the daughter of Shame, who was a Kohen, therefore she should get Srefa. Right? There is a different punishment for a daughter of a Kohen than for others when they are Mizana. I believe they point out that Shame is long dead by now, so she's a descendant from Shame, but she's in the priestly class, and that's why she's subject to this punishment. So the Ramban says, wait a second, I don't understand what's going on here. Shabbos Kohen Eino Shabbas Kohen Eino Chayeva Srefa El Biznus Im Zika Sabal. The only Bas Kohen is only Chayev Srefa when she has Nus after being married to a Baal. Aruso Nusua means she actually to be married to somebody. Moshe Mufurish Megamara Sanhedrin. Right, she would be, that's only if she's actually an adulterer. But Tamar in this category is not an adulterer. Tamar in this situation is a. She has a zika. She has a connection. She's a misyaveme. She's supposed to be a shomeris yavam. That's the term. She's a shomeris yavam, but she shouldn't be subject to death for that. She's not chayv misa at all. It's only a prohibition. So why is she chayv the death penalty at all? If you want to tell me that, well, yibum is much stronger by the Bnei Noach, and therefore she's considered as if she's married already. And And any time a non-Jew violates their dinim, right, they might be chayiv death. Wait a sec, but Yehuda started it. Doesn't seem to be understanding from the Gemara Sanhedrin. So what's going on here? So Venira Li, Yehuda Katzin Shoter Umoshel Ba'aretz. That Yehuda was a wise man. Yehuda was recognized as being a Ben Yaakov, and he was kind of a leader. So they came to him for the psak. So therefore, his daughter-in-law was not going to be judged like other people. She did worse. She was mevaza the malchus. Yehuda, in effect, was a king. He was a person, a gavri. He was in charge, and she's not being punished as a somebody who did an immoral act. She's being punished as somebody who's subverting the king. And for that reason, Yehuda said, take her out and let her be burnt. They're going to do whatever he said. So therefore, he judged her, A, as subverting his kingship and subverting the priestliness of her parents, so therefore she was going to be chayv the death penalty.
She's setting the whole system, the whole social order.
That's pshat number one that the Rambam gives, and then he gives pshat number two, which is fascinating. V'al derech hapshat yitachin shehaya mishpatim kenog hayom b'miksos arzo sfad. Second pshat, sfard. That the second pshat is that it could be that they're judging her in the way that they do nowadays in plenty of the Spanish lands. What's that? She'isha sher tizana tachas isha, that a woman who has an affair while married, mosrin osa labaila, they give her over to the husband and say, v'hu dan osa l'misa o l'chaim kirtza no. And he decides, you want her dead or you want her alive? Right, the husband can decide what happens. V'ine ha'isim yu'edis l'shela b'no, so she is designated to Yehuda's son, so therefore Yehuda gets to decide what's going to be with her. She did a sin, so Yehuda gets to decide. Okay. But with the Ramban's other pshatim, we understand a little bit more about what's going on here. What's the story? Let's just review. Yehuda goes and marries and has these boys. Okay, these boys, for every sin, so the Ramban seems to assume that he knew that they sinned. So therefore, even before Tamar goes ahead and marries Shelah, before she goes ahead and marries son number three, Yehuda says, you know, let's wait till Shelah gets a little bit older, let him get a little bit more mature before he goes and marries Tamar. Otherwise, Shelah is also going to get into the same trouble that his brothers did. So therefore, he puts her on ice. Sends her home, says, wait for a little while, we'll come back and marry her. According to the Ramban, Yehuda had every intention that she was going to marry Shelah, just Shelah had to get older. Right. Tamar is sitting, looking at her watch, saying, no, it's time. It's time. If my father-in-law, if Yehuda really meant that I should marry Shelah, he would have sent Shelah by now. It must be that it was all a trick, and therefore, and he really didn't mean that I was going to go ahead and marry Shelah, but I still want to do this Yibam. I still want to attain the seed of the of Yehuda's family. Right. So she goes after Yehuda, not by marrying him, but by seducing him as a zona. She gets impregnated by Yehuda, and now she has the royal seed within her. Now she's going to be able to have a child from the family of Yehuda. However, that has the risk. She's going to be put to death otherwise. Yehuda says, because she's pregnant, it seems like she had an affair. Yehuda assumes that she had an affair, therefore she's chayiv misa, therefore she's going to be put to death until she's able to save herself by sending the note to Yehuda saying, I'm that girl. I'm the one. It's from you. And it is a legitimate child that I'm having, because in those days, Yibam wasn't just between brothers. Yibam could have also been by next of kin as well. So
Could have been by anyone, the brother.
You mean any of the other Shvatim could have married her. Right. Yeah, but they're someplace else now. They're watching sheep and Chevron. They're elsewhere. All right? So that's I think the way that the Ramban would try to translate this whole story.
Very interesting. I'm interested. I just withdraw about an understanding between man and a woman. And I remember you talked about Sarah Imenu and Abraham, Hagar. Hagar, I mean, Sarah felt that Abraham wasn't respectful for her, let Hagar get away with it. So it'd be interesting if we could chart through time how man.